Christ's glory, His divine story. Every Thursday on Morning Glory. Catch the vibe with me, Karuna Munshi, on Radio Sai Thursday Live on Asia Stream at 9:40 a.m. Om Shri Sai Ram. Loving salutations at the lotus feet of Bhagwan Shri Sathya Sai Baba. The voice, the ears, the heart and soul of Radio Sai. Sai Ram, dear listeners, and welcome to Thursday Live. You're tuned to Asia Stream, coming to you live from Prashanti Nilayam, the spiritual capital of the universe. My name is Karuna, and on the sound console is audio engineer Sunil, ably assisted by Yathartha. Thank you for staying with us on this lovely Thursday, May the 2nd, 2013. We're coming to you live from the Radio Sai studios here at Prashanti Nilayam with a show full of surprises. The time in Prashanti Nilayam right now is 9:40 a.m. Current weather conditions in Prashanti Nilayam call for clear skies with occasional cloud cover but no precipitation. Midday high of balmy 39 degrees Celsius with somewhat cooler evenings and overnight temperature at 25 degrees Celsius. Coming up on Morning Glory, two segments, each of which is a departure from the conventional menu I usually serve on Morning Glory. In place of a live studio guest today, I'm inspired to bring you an outstanding talk that was part of the Interfaith Symposium held in Prashanti Nilayam last year during Guru Purnima. That day, scholars from various faith groups spoke on the common ground among religious traditions and the singular goal of every path, namely the transformation of the human heart. Each talk was riveting, and the vast global congregation at Prashanti Nilayam was moved by what they heard. On Morning Glory this morning, I will bring you one of those talks that I felt is a must listen for every person who was drawn to Bhagwan for his ecumenical views and aspires to live by the Sarvadharma vision of the Sai Mission. That talk by an eminent Indian, Professor Akhtarullah Wasi, Head of the Department of Islamic Studies, Jamia Millia Islamia, New Delhi, will come up for your listening pleasure in the second half of the program. But first, coming up right here, right now, another in-house fleeting moments interview with a member of the Radio Sai team. This two-part interview was recorded a while ago and was played just once on a stream, hence it has been long overdue across streams. Today I'm happy to play it for you, but I do feel a bit embarrassed doing so. Why this awkwardness, you might wonder? You will find out very soon. Suffice to say for now that this interview was conducted neither by Brother Bishu nor I, but by Ms. Vasanti Sundaram, a veteran journalist from Dubai. Over now to the mystery member of the Radio Sai team in conversation with Radio Sai's contributing editor, Vasanti Sundaram. And keep guessing who that just might be.
It's time to let you in into that surprise. Any guesses? What is it that we have coming up for you? Well, it's none other than Sister Karuna herself, who's graciously consented to take the hot seat and be interviewed on Morning Glory. Before I invite her to the conversation, allow me to say a few words about Sister Karuna. A former student of Sri Sathya Sai Institute of Higher Learning, Anantapur Campus, class of 1985. She holds a bachelor's degree in English, political science and philosophy. She's also a master's in philosophy, a gold medalist. Consistently on top of her class, she's received her degrees from none other than the Chancellor's divine hands. Karuna is trained in electronic news gathering, basic TV production and documentary making from the Film and TV Institute of India, Pune. She's worked in the print and audio-visual media and corporate communications, media relations in India and Canada. After serving the Sai organization actively in various capacities in Toronto, Canada for nearly 20 years, she relocated to Parthi in 2009. Currently, Karuna serves at Radio Sai, producing programs among overseeing other roles. Sai Ram, Sister Karuna, thank you for taking the hot seat. How does it feel to be on the other side of the deck?
Sai Ram Vasanti and Sai Ram to all our listeners, I would say it's definitely more challenging to answer questions than to pose them. But in both cases, I think I'm going to need Swami's blessings and grace to think and speak through me.
Let's get to the first question that I have for you today. As a former student of Sri Sathya Sai Baba's University, you were blessed to study at the Anantapur campus for 6 years. And your daughter also studied in Baba's elementary school in Puttaparthi. And within your immediate family, you had actually 9 of you were students at the Anantapur, various high educational institutes.
And over 2 generations.
2 generations. And it's 44 years now since you've been in Baba's immediate realm. How do you say you've evolved in your spiritual relationship with Bhagwan? I mean, like, if I hold a mirror in front of you right now, what do you see as of yourself as a reflection in relation to Baba?
I see a wannabe, to say the least, someone who's constantly struggling to improve from the small I to the big I. For me, Swami is really me, but only complete and perfect. He is my role model. He's somebody I want to be. I want to grow into a person as loving, as giving, as forgiving, as compassionate, as caring as he was. And I know one day I will, but it's a process and I'm definitely not there yet. And I know that everybody has their path and Swami has laid mine out for me and I'm inching towards it one step at a time, and sometimes I regress a couple of steps along the way and then progress one again. But there are fleeting moments in between in this journey where I do sense moments of oneness, which are few and far between, but they are so glorious that the desire to be in that state for longer spells is just intense. These are these moments when the mind is really still and the senses somehow calm down, and the sense of I-ness that prevails is very complete, is very peaceful, and is totally satisfying. I think that's a glimpse of one's divine self or God self. And Vasanthi, you spoke of a reflection in a mirror that reminds me of one of my favorite quotes from Jalaluddin Rumi, a Sufi poet, and I never tire of repeating it. And I'd love to quote it for you right now, if I may. And Umi says, "You have no idea how hard I have looked for a gift to bring you. Nothing seemed right. What's the point of bringing gold to the gold mine or water to the ocean? Everything I came up with was like taking spices to the Orient. It's no good giving my heart and my soul because you already have these. So I have brought you a mirror. Look at yourself and remember me." Unquote. That's what I tell Swami, because we are nothing but his reflections. That we find ourselves so happy in the divine presence is because we see ourselves being reflected in his divinity. That is why we experience such a perfection and bliss and completeness when we are around Swami. And the goal, I think, is to feel like that all the time.
You mentioned that you feel a sense of oneness when you see him and you as one.
And I also said occasionally.
Yeah.
Yes.
And you've mentioned this to me in our conversations that we have over emails and
G-talk.
You've often told me to remind myself that I am God. When did this consciousness take seed in you, and how did your conviction grow that you are indeed God? You can also tell us how saying that you're God helped you tide some of those challenging circumstances in life.
Let me start in the immediate past. The past 1 year has been the most challenging in my personal life, and it's as though every day a new storm is brewing to suck me in. Under these confusing and scary and difficult circumstances, every time I repeat to myself that I am God and none other than God, I find my courage and my self-confidence soaring, and I find myself being able to step back and be a witness to all this craziness around me. I see everything unfolding as a drama, and I try to assess how well am I playing my role in all this. You know, if when we step back and take this witness stand, it gives you a perspective like never before to life and its patterns. A certain clarity emerges, and I realize I don't need to take everything as seriously as I tend to do, and I need not get caught up in the drama as much as I tend to do. And this spectator witness perspective comes whenever I remind myself who I truly am. I am the divine self. So remembering lends a sensible dose of detachment to me. And it tells me to do my role as best as I can, but not worry about the outcomes because they always belong to Swami. As a result, I find I'm able to navigate through everything that life is throwing at me with a little bit more ease and calm and equipoise. Now, going back to my childhood, I must say that whenever I had to study for exams or face a test or had a scary moment, I would repeat this affirmation to myself, because Swami came very early in my life, so we were familiar with his teachings, that I am God and none other than God. And it always, without fail, infused a certain sense of calmness and confidence in me, even as a child. And this affirmation has let me trust myself
as the repository of wisdom which I'm not consciously aware of. By that I mean, whenever I rely on my God Self package to resolve an issue, I find myself coming up with solutions and perspectives that external knowledge could not have bestowed on me. It's not something I learnt at school or college or university. It just springs from within. And that wisdom that comes from within comes from one's God Self. So I know for sure that this is not mine. It's coming from, or it's rather, it's really from the real me, the God me. And whenever I remind myself about the fact that I am God and none other than God, I always feel buoyant and joyful and positive and self-confident for most part. And I highly recommend buying into this God Self package for a healthy level of self-esteem. I think a lot of young people today, especially a lot of women, surprisingly, even educated ones, suffer from that issue of low self-esteem.
True.
And in my case, I find just reminding myself I'm none other than God always helps me to feel very positive about myself in a very humble way, not from a place of arrogance or pride, but having faith in my inner strengths and my ability to deal with every situation and overcome.
Yeah, it's helped me, if I may share this with you, and I'm sure all the Radio Sai listeners who are listening to your words today would take a lesson from the experience that you've had. I read in a heart-to-heart write-up that you did under the section Swami and Me, you've said that Sri Satya Sai is embedded in your DNA code, that Sai is an integral part of your genetic makeup. And this became apparent when you first saw a picture of Swami. Could you elaborate on this moment of initiation, if you could travel back in time a little?
Sure, I think it must have been in my childhood, somewhere around the year 1968 or 69, and my family and I lived in Srinagar in Kashmir, in the valley of Kashmir, and that's when Swami came into our lives through my older sister, who attended a school where she had students from all over India, including a friend named Sushma, who's
the school was in Kashmir.
Yes, it was Kendriya Vidyalaya, central school. Mm-hmm. Only my elder sister attended the school. The rest of us attended a different school. So student population in our school was very homogenous, but in hers it was very mixed. There were people from all parts of India, especially the armed forces. And it was one such family, her classmate named Sushma, who told us about Swami. Now, I'm saying this only in hindsight, because when I look back, I can make sense of it. I think our family's spiritual leanings were such that we were really primed to receive Swami into our hearts at that time.
You said you're ready.
We were totally ready, because my mother was a deeply religious lady who read her Ramcharitramanas every single day. My dad performed his Lingam Abhishekam. We loved sages and saints, and our home was a place where we welcomed saints from Hindu as well as Muslim persuasions. I remember two, for example, from my childhood, a Hindu saint named Tatibab, who often came and blessed us in our childhood. And then we were smitten by this Muslim peer. His name was Sonbab. He looked like Jesus the Christ. He was a beautiful person, delightful soul. He was like a light being. And when he came into our homes, we sang our regular bhajans to him, and he was fine with that, because the Kashmir of those days was a very tolerant and happy Kashmir, where there was a lot of harmony.
This was around which year?
1968, 69, early 70s. And although we were Kashmiri Brahmins, we attended an Irish convent. So you see, my parents had a very ecumenical outlook in life, and they had these enormously loving hearts. So when Swami came, in his teachings we found a completion of our spiritual quest. Everything we were looking, Swami summed it up perfectly for us. So he was just natural. We were like fish taking to water. We had no doubt that the avatar had incarnated, and he lived in Bangalore. And we used to assume, living in north in Kashmir, that everybody who lived in Bangalore was a special being who had incarnated to be. And we thought everybody in Bangalore knows about God and earth, and everybody in Bangalore is vegetarian.
Okay.
That sort of a thing.
Yeah.
So it was because we were super excited about having Swami in our lives. But if I had to pick just one defining moment, I like to call it my Tattvamasi moment, my aha moment, I think it occurred about 10 years after Swami came into my life. For 10 years in my childhood, Swami became an intensely close connection in my heart, my best buddy, but I never got an opportunity to be in his physical presence. Other members of my family did, I did not. So it was sometime in, I think, 1978 that we used to live in Singapore, and I was a young teenager, and I went to Vrindavan with my family, and that was the first time I went to Swami's physical presence and I was dying to get close to this person whom I had prayed to, talked to, connected with, dreamt of for 10 years. He was a real part of my life, breathing, living, but invisible to the naked eye, to other people. But when I went there, I found myself so desperate because Swami was busy with the summer course and we were not participants. So one day outside the auditorium, the college auditorium in Vrindavan, my mom and I were trying to stand by the porch so that when Swami would come out after his discourse, we would just have one close darshan as he got into the car. But the volunteer was very firm in doing her duty and she ensured that we were nowhere near the porch. And actually, in that moment, it's so deeply etched in my head that I can still remember the volunteer and her face. And whenever she comes to Parthi for darshan, I think of that moment. So it was a real struggle. Mom and I were praying, Swami, can we just stand near the porch? And eventually when Swami came out, there was some confusion there. And in the confusion, we managed to sneak in and stand with the crowd that was surrounding the car. And at that moment, Swami looked at both of us from a distance. And then he looked intensely at me. I wasn't sure if it was for real that he was looking straight, peering into my soul, just looking into my eyes. And he started walking towards me. And I remember that moment so well. I'm not sure. I think I possibly had a letter in my hand, which Swami might have taken, but I was lost in the moment. And as he came closer, his powerful gaze, it just went deep within me. And my gaze was locked with God's gaze. And he had cast his spell on me. And I just cannot describe that moment because I recognized something there. I saw a mirror and in that mirror I saw who I really was supposed to be and who I really wanted to be. So from that moment where Swami left, walked away, and I had this intense desire to cry as hard as I could. I had to unburden my heart. It was like a floodgate of emotions had just opened up and I remember being so embarrassed because I was crying in public and I was crying so hard, but it felt so good to weep it out because it was bliss. I was on a high. I didn't know whether I was walking on ground. I didn't know how my mom held my hand and walked me back to our car. I don't recall any of that. But that moment when Swami looked in my eyes, I became aware of a different state of consciousness and I also became aware of a different life goal. And from that moment onwards, I realized that Swami was going to be the object and subject of my adoration. He was going to be the goal of my life. And all I had to do was to do everything it takes to make him happy, to please him, and ultimately become him. And that became the goal of my life and it still is to this date.
And you were a teenager when you had this profound experience.
I was 16.
Wow.
Yeah.
That must have been life-altering.
Totally life-altering. And no words were spoken. It was in total silence and it was a very long, what seemed like a long, several, many seconds, just peering into me. And it was a serious look. And in the black iris of Swami's eyes, I just experienced utter infinity. And I lost all sense of time, space and who I was. And then I sort of woke up to a new reality. This is who I'm meant to be. This is how I'm meant to be. And this is who I'm supposed to please. And one day I'm going to become Swami. I don't know how and when. And for the immediate goal was to please him and to hang out with him and to be as close to him as possible. And that's how I ended up being a student of Swami.
Do you say that you grew up in that moment suddenly?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Quantum.
Yeah.
There was a real growth spurt.
And did you share it with your peers in school? Did they believe you?
I was not the only one with such unique experiences. Anandpur was full of girls who had amazing experiences, more intense than mine. But I would say many of them had close physical experiences. But I'm the poster girl for the least amount of physical experiences. Mine are mostly internal and at different levels of consciousness. But yes, in Anandpur, many girls had amazing stories to share, which were all real, and we saw them happen before our eyes.
Mention of Anandpur, that comes to my next question. Within that simulated environment where almost everyone is like-minded, like you say, everyone had an experience of a similar nature, was it easy to stay on the path, or did you have some testing moments when you wished that, oh, I wish I could get away from this environment, I wish I could get away from this all? Did you feel like that? I mean, I wouldn't say it's unnatural because you were, after all, impressionable age, young, growing up. So,
well, yeah, I was an 18-year-old teenager who came from a very protected and comfortable home environment with very loving, doting parents, a very functional family. I lived in the comforts of a nice home in Singapore at that time. So the rigors of Anandpur's Spartan lifestyle and all the hardships of the Anandpur schedule of 1980 were very hard, both on my body and my mind.
Mm.
And I just want to remind listeners that the temperatures in Anantapur and in the entire Rayalaseema area used to be much higher, I think, in those days. Some lot of greening has happened and Puttaparthi has cooled down and so has Anantapur with all the forestation.
So would you say reverse climate change is happening?
Total. Reverse climate change happened because of divine grace in these two places. And in 1980, there were no fans in the hostel. And 8 girls to a room with little windows with hardly any major air circulation or breeze. I used to dread nightfall. I was okay during the day because I just could not sleep in that stifling heat without air conditioning and a comfortable bed. And what I used to do is I would try to sleep in the corridor outside my room because I lived in the ground floor and there was a garden in the middle. So I used to hope that somehow from the sky a whiff of breeze will come and these cactus plants and the few trees that then grew in the garden would somehow cool the temperature in a few hours and I would get good sleep. But then there were those big king-sized, jumbo-sized mosquitoes to deal with and they just chewed me up. So I think a lot of people found it
Kashmiri
very...
Kashmiri blood.
Blood, yes. So a lot of girls found, local girls found it very amusing that as soon as the bell would ring to mark the end of study hours, I would start sweeping the corridor and then disinfect it with Dettol water, then mop it because this was before all the mosquito coils and all those things came into existence. These were the years when people got eaten up by big mosquitoes at any time. And then I would lay out my mat there and try to cover myself with many bed sheets, but I died of heat under those bed sheets. And the food was very different, which was not bad. I enjoyed it, but it was different. The schedule was rigorous. I did not mind because I wanted to live a spiritual life. But what I did mind was I came to Anantapur because I wanted to be with Swami and close to him. And studies had nothing to do with it in my mind.
Okay.
10 years of loving, doting, 12 years by now of Swami had made, I was a bright student, but I had gotten rid of all ambition to succeed in life professionally or academically. So I was using Anantapur as a bait to get close to Swami. But when I got there, they actually expected us to study and write exams. And that was such a disappointment. And I was saying, oh my God, I did not bargain for actually studying lessons and writing assignments. And that was really a harsh reality. And I got very, very sad.
So the curriculum was tough.
Yes, and I had no inclination towards it. Okay. So there were many reasons for me to want to run away from Anantapur. Many valid reasons. But then there was that magnet, the sweetness of that magnet Swami that we got to meet on every Sunday. I suffered my life Monday through Saturday in the beginning because I looked forward to Sundays because on most Sundays they brought us in buses to Puttaparthi. And the joy of interacting face to face with the God who was so available to you. It was just so incredible. The sweetness, the bliss of that moment, even if I had to walk on fire, I would do that again anytime just to experience Swami. So what were a few hardships like having to study and deal with mosquitoes and heat? They were nothing. They fell by the wayside. They lost their significance. Because Swami was the big picture and he just made up for everything.
Your daughter also studied in the same school.
She studied in Swami's primary school in Prashanthi Nilayam.
Now, mothers and daughters have a lot to share. They talk about a lot of things. What do you and your daughter talk about your each other's experiences here?
Swami is such a common bond for us. And I think at some level we connect more as the alumni of Swami's institutions and we have common stories and common experiences and we can really empathize and relate to each other's thought process very well because we have that deeper extra connection over and above the connections that all mothers and daughters have.
Yeah, that's really beautiful.
It is. It's a real
very
blessing.
Very rich. Yeah.
Very, very beautiful.
So when you're talking about special moments with Swami that you've shared, what is your special moment?
There are many like everybody else has, but there's one that comes to mind is shortly after I joined Swami's college. I went with so much of anticipation. I thought Swami will welcome me with open arms and whatnot because he treated me like a real princess when I was home and when I did not live near him. He was just the center of my life. And every little thing or big thing, I involved Swami and I made promises and I asked for help with my studies and he responded. He was a living God. I remember my sisters and I, one time we read in books all about this Vibhuti manifestation and we decided to get up at 4 at home and start praying. And actually Swami responded by manifesting Vibhuti. So for us, Swami was so real. But when I came to Anantapur, I felt lost in the crowd. And as I told you, the environment was very different. And I was feeling very frustrated trying to cope with so many changes. I felt my focus was going. And I felt my connection with Swami had weakened by coming close to him to Anantapur because there were so many girls. Did he even know about me?
You mean you had to share that attention.
The attention with so many others. I was one of many.
You were possessive.
Yes, very. Aren't we all when it comes to something as dear as Swami?
Yeah.
But when I came here, I realized I had to continue my whatever I was doing to get his attention. So I tried very hard. Okay, I'm going to please Swami, but trying to adjust with this. I'm going to please, you know, I agreed even to study, which I didn't want to do in the first place. I thought, you know, I can just ignore the academics and worry about Swami. I tried to make many changes in my life, and small changes, which were huge for me at that time, because I wanted to please him. But then did he even know? And that's when Swami came for the first ever visit to our college during my student days. Even in that, I just saw others having a great time getting close to him. See, I was new to the game. I did not know how to position myself strategically at vantage points to get close to him and grab chances. And I was totally lost. And I said, oh God, he doesn't even know me now. And he was my best friend. And it was such a sense of loss for me. And then very heartbrokenly, I went to the hostel with my friend. And we stood in a corridor, ground floor corridor in the hostel outside the medicine room. And from somewhere, Swami just came from the other side and he started walking in the garden in the middle of the hostel towards us. Everybody just froze in their spots with folded hands. And when Swami neared us, the corridor was a few steps up. So Swami looked down very daintily and he lifted the hem of his robes, his eyelids lowered, the beautiful form of God, the radiance, the effulgent. He was just like 3 feet away from us and he lifted his hem and he delicately and daintily climbed the two steps and then in a split second, from looking at his feet, he was looking into my eyes. Again, that deep, peering look. And he came very close to me. And he spoke just two words. And I was in ecstasy from a state of utter agony till then. He just looked at me and he said, good girl.
Ah.
It was such an acknowledgement. It was such a validation for me. I felt all the struggles I had been through all this time and all those little efforts I was making to become a better daughter and a better student of Swami, he had noted them. And it was, you know, if your computer is going haywire and you just press the start power button for 10 seconds and reboot and all systems come back, it was like that. Swami had pressed some reboot button through my eyes and everything was okay with my world. And it was such a reassurance, like a character certificate from Swami. So I go back to that moment every now and then when I'm feeling I'm going crazy and nothing is making sense, and I try to revisit it and to experience the bliss of Swami looking me in the eyes and saying, good girl. And I keep hoping he still feels the same way about me.
You know, in revisiting that incident, you've actually played out a beautiful montage for all of us, and we can imagine how you must have felt.
You know, I grew wings. I was flying. I didn't know anything else. I was so happy.
Yeah. When it was time for you to leave college, and you must have had your final interview, as is the process, what words of wisdom did Swami impart that helped you walk out into that world which is so different with less fear and more courage?
Well, Swami spoke many words of wisdom in the interview. Each syllable that God speaks is the Vedas, and every single smile, joke, no, yes, is precious because his breath is the breath of the Vedas. But two lessons that have stayed with me all my life, and I often mention them whenever I have an opportunity. The first was Swami told us that as his daughters, we must always watch out for our character. He said, if wealth is lost, nothing is lost. If health is lost, something is lost. But if character is lost, everything is lost.
Mm.
And he said for women, it was very important, as for men, I'm sure, to watch their character. And he said, as the alumni of the Sai University, we should always be very mindful of how we conduct ourselves. And he gave us the example of this huge boulder. Building character is like carrying an enormous boulder uphill. So you're huffing and you're puffing and you're inching very slowly trying to take it up. It's a process and it's quite laborious. But one tiny slip and the whole thing comes crumbling down and it can shatter in seconds.
True.
So what took you years and decades to take up can come down crashing in seconds if there is a slip. So he advised us against that slip. And he told us to be very mindful. The second one is the most beautiful lesson Swami taught me. When I was finishing my bachelor's degree and I was desperate to come back for master's, I wasn't sure if my mom and dad would agree to the idea because they had different plans for me. So in the middle of the interview, at one point in time, I was sitting right at his lotus feet and my sister was beside me. When he looked at me, he was talking and he said, "We should do this, we should do that. Hana, Kada?" So I was speaking so sweetly. And we said, yeah, we kept nodding, "Yes, Swami, you're right." How could he not be right? Mm. Then I said, when there was a pause, "Swami, I have a problem." And he looked at me and said, "What, Ma?" So I felt so self-conscious to talk about this problem in front of like 17 other girls. So I sort of knelt up and I went very close to his ear. And I still remember Swami had such big hair at that time in 1983. And he brought his ear close. He lent me his ear and his full attention. And his soft divine hair was so close to my face. Then I said, "Swami..." And I didn't know how to speak, but I had to use this moment. If I didn't avail of it, it would be lost forever. So I started speaking in rapid fire Kashmiri, which is my mother tongue, because I knew nobody else in that room was going to understand.
You spoke in Kashmiri.
Of course. So I went on this long rant and I told him all about my parents had different plans and I don't want to go to Kashmir and I don't want to stay back. I want to come back. Will you please save me, Swami? Please save me. So first Swami just sort of withdrew his face and he had this cute quizzical look on his face and he said, "Pagal, kaun si bhasha bolta hai? Pashto?" And he called me crazy and he said, "What language are you speaking? Is it Persian or Pashto? Because Kashmiri does sound a lot like Pashto." And then I started to cry by this time. I was so overwhelmed. So my sister came to my rescue and she said, "Swami, but you always say there is only one language, the language of the heart." And Swami was so happy with her reply. He said, "That is right. Yes, yes, very good." Because, you know, we're giving him back a taste of his own medicine. So Swami was very pleased. And then he looked me in the eye and he said, "You don't worry. You just go and pray and you don't worry about anything. Everything will be all right." And then Swami spoke to us about the power of now. He said in the same interview, he went on to elaborate that very often, you know, we waste the most beautiful and precious moments in our lives by brooding over the past or worrying about the future. He said both are extremely wasteful activities because the past is gone, is beyond recovery. The future is a mystery. Past is history, future is mystery. It's not known to you. All you have is the given moment in your hand. It's a gift from God. That's why it's called the present. It's a present. He said, live it well. The future will take care of itself. So from that day onwards, I've taken that to heart that every time I worry about, you know, things didn't go well in past, I tell myself it's beyond recovery. Then I worry what's going to happen in the future and I remind myself, Swami said, just live well in the present and the future will take care of itself, which it has always. And it's like if we plant lemon seeds in the soil, we cannot expect to grow a little mango sapling that will grow into a big tree one day and give us luscious, juicy, sweet mangoes. What it will bear is a fruit that is citrus, high in vitamin C potency, and it's sour. So Swami said, whatever we sow in the present moment will determine the harvest we will reap when we go ahead. So those two lessons, the power of now, the need to seize it, devour it, live it, chew it, be with it. That's what I learned. And also, it's very important for all of us who work under the tag of Swami's divine name to be mindful of our character at all times. Because a small slip can mess up everything we built over years.
Hey, when you say character, when I was driving towards Puttaparthi, I saw a large billboard with Swami's image there and it says, where education stops or where education ends, character starts.
Begins. Yeah, yes. Character because begins. The end of education is character, yeah. According to Bhagwan.
True. Baba inspires millions around the globe to lead purpose-driven lives by practicing the five universal values of truth, peace, love, right conduct and non-violence. If you look at your own life, could you give us an example of each one of these values that you're proud of having practiced? I mean, that's a tricky question. It's a tall question, perhaps.
It is.
Life would have called upon you to practice it at various occasions and probably every day.
Of course.
So if I'm going to ask you to just give us an instance for each, what would you choose?
Vasanthi, I'd really be exaggerating if I said that I practice the five human values clinically. But when you grow up under the watchful eye of a role model such as the Avatar himself, you see the blueprint of a balanced and harmonious life being laid out before you. Now, being in his care has also made all of us his students, I would say, very sensitive self-monitors. Swami gives us the example of a messy stained tablecloth. He says it's got all kinds of spots and stains on it. And if you drop a little bit of ink on it, nobody will really notice because it'll blend with the many spots. But if you have a pristine, pure, immaculate, white, clean tablecloth, Even a dot of ink or a drop of tea that falls on it will show. So I think because it's against a clean background, everything will be very visible. I believe to be in a state of truth and peace and love and non-violence and right conduct, the five human values, that is our true nature. The moment we violate it or deviate from it, we are good self-monitors to feel the prick of our own conscience and realize that what we are thinking goes against our nature as God. That is how Swami has raised us to be brutally conscientious and sensitive and objective self-monitors.
That needs much thinking.
Yes.
Could you repeat that so that we get it again?
That basically when you're living in a state of godhood, your God self, practicing truth, peace, right conduct, non-violence, it's just natural.
Okay.
Love.
It's a and way of life.
It is. It's the normal rhythm of your being. But the moment you violate, you can feel the prick very quickly because we become very sensitive self-monitors. And the moment we feel that we are violating, I'm not practicing right conduct, I'm not practicing love.
And the alarm bell goes into your conscience.
And you know, it's funny because I've heard many other people whom I've interviewed say this, and it's very true for me as well. Not only does my conscience bother me, I either bang my head or crush my finger or some physical punishment just drops from the universe and bangs me on my head. And I right away know what I'm doing, I'm not meant to do. I need a course correction right away. Even if I'm doing a story for, let's say, Radio Sai, I'm writing a documentary script, I always pray and ask Swami to write. If my theme or if my words or if my sentence is not going the right way, I'm always guided to go and delete that line and rework on it. So there is this constant self-monitoring. There is, it's like being under a radar at all times. And every time you make a little slip here or there, you are told to course correct. And I think that's my experience with practicing human values. When I'm in my natural state, I do them not consciously. The moment I deviate from them, I know, I get my knock on the head. But what Swami does is he's always trying to make you rise to the next level. So he puts challenges in your path. They're only there to make you realize what your weaknesses are. And I have found that every time I've made bad choices in life and come to regret them, it's because I deviated from the path of the human values. And whenever I decided, no matter how hard it is, I'm going to stick to them, I succeeded and I felt good about it.
Is there any one incident or one instance in life where you had to draw upon this resource very heavily and live up to Swami's values?
Every time I deal with very difficult people and I'm having a difference of opinion and those moments I feel I really know the way to be, the moment I try to think, and it happens mostly in workplace situations or in family life, that person who's antagonizing me and who's really becoming a prick, so to speak, is actually Swami. And the true core of that person is Swami, and his or her way of thinking may be different from me. When I begin to proceed from that premise, I find my heart being very open to receiving them as embodiments of God. I find my tone, my language, my body language, my choice of words, my attitude towards them softens, and I find I'm able to form a connection and I'm able to disagree with people in a more agreeable manner, and we can proceed and get work done. So when I'm looking to solve a tricky situation, I go back to remembering that I'm God and so is the person across from me, who at that time doesn't seem anything godly to me. And whenever I'm in a scary, difficult situation, all I do is I keep pumping pink from my heart chakra. And I keep sending love to the person or the situation around me. It happens like any time, whether I'm stuck in a traffic jam or I'm in a long line and I find the person ahead of me at the checkout counter at a supermarket is not got the right change or is just holding up a line and I'm getting irritated, I start practicing peace and love and I send love to everybody, trying to tell myself they're all little flames, they're all God. And I find myself losing my temper less and getting irritated less and being more calm and more accepting.
That's a very valuable lesson, because most of us, we lose the cool so easily. We take little time to step back and retrospect or introspect to even think what we should, how we should react to a situation.
It's a process. I'm not there. I'm definitely not there, but I, like everybody else, for me it's a process. We are all at different stages and it's a challenge, but I always find that following the five human values in the long term has only benefited me. And deviating from them has only led me to regret. Sai's glory, his divine story. every Thursday on Morning Glory. Catch The Vibe with me, Karuna Munshi, on Radio Size Thursday Live on Asia Stream at 9:40 a.m.
Sairam, dear listeners, and welcome back to Morning Glory on May the 2nd, 2013. I do hope you found some worth in my conversation with my colleague, Sister Vasanti Sundaram, Radio Size Contributing Editor based in Dubai. Part 2 of this interview is due next week right here on Morning Glory, same time. And yes, your feedback does matter very much. So please go ahead and fire that email to us. I will be looking forward to it very nervously. As always, you can reach us at listener@radiosci.org. And now, it's time to celebrate the all-inclusive multi-faith vision of the Sci movement. Prashanthi Nilayam was host to a symposium on unity of faiths on 2nd of July 2012 with addresses in the morning on Hinduism by His Holiness Swami Dayanand Saraswati and on Islam by Professor Akhtarullah Wasi, head of the Department of Islamic Studies, Jamia Millia Islamia, New Delhi. Both these brilliant talks had the audience spellbound. Today on Morning Glory, you can enjoy one of these two talks, the one by Professor Akhtarul Wasi, and I know you will love listening to this practicing Muslim whose faith in God has made him a true Indian and a global citizen. You will first hear the symposium moderator, Dr. Sri Rangarajan, introduce the speaker, and then it is Professor Vasi's talk from Prashanthi Nilayam that was delivered here in the divine presence of the Mahasamadhi on July the 2nd, 2012. Over now to Professor Wasi.
Professor Akhtarul Wasi, Head Department of Islamic Studies, Jamia Millia Islamia, New Delhi, was born in 1951. He completed his schooling and pre-university from Aligarh Muslim University. He then went on to complete his BA Honours, Bachelor of Theology, Master of Theology and MA in Islamic Studies from the same institution. He joined as a lecturer in Islamic Studies in Jamia Millia Islamia in 1978. He also taught at the Aligarh Muslim University. In 1987, he was promoted as reader and then as professor in 1991. He is currently engaged in teaching and research and is the head Department of Islamic Studies, Jamia Millia Islamia. He is also the Honorary Director, Zakir Hussain Institute of Islamic Studies. He is currently supervising 7 doctoral research scholars. Professor Wasi is the editor of a number of journals and magazines at the Zakir Hussain Institute of Islamic Studies. In addition to these responsibilities, he also holds several other positions. He is Vice Chairman, Urdu Academic Delhi, Government of NCT of Delhi, General Secretary, South Asia Interreligious Council on HIV/AIDS in collaboration with UNICEF and World Conference of Religions for Peace, New York, India Interfaith Coalition on HIV/AIDS, India, and Vice President, Foundation of SARC Writers and Literature. Professor Wasi was one of the first from the Jamia Academic Fraternity to be awarded the Fulbright Fellowship during the period September to December 2008. He is member of Academic Council, Board of Studies, Board of Research Studies, Review Boards and Editorial Boards at several educational institutions and also member of various committees of the Government of India. He has a number of publications to his credit. He has published over a dozen books, edited 18 books, translated 6 books, authored 16 articles in special commemorative volumes, and he has to his credit over 450 articles and reviews in Urdu, Hindi and English. He has published in various journals and magazines, and also he has over 400 radio and 250 TV talks and other programs to his credit. Professor Wasi has won a number of fellowships, scholarships, other prestigious awards. To name a few, he won the Madhya Pradesh Urdu Academy's Hakim Kamrul Hassan All India Award for Contribution to Urdu Language and Literature in 2009-2010, Sir Syed Ahmed Khan Award for Interfaith Understanding, Aligarh Alumni Association, New York, 1996 Maulana Muhammad Ali Jauhar Award, New Delhi, and 1985 Award from the Urdu Academy, Delhi on Sir Syed Ki Talimi Tehreek. Professor Wasi has stood extensively across the globe from 1976 to date on several academic and semi-academic matters and has visited a number of countries across all continents of the world. So now it's our great privilege to have Professor Akhtarul Wasi addressing us. Professor Akhtarul Wasi.
شروع کرتا ہوں اللہ کے نام سے جو سرو ویاپی ہے سرو شکتیمان ہے جو کرونا دیا اور پریرنا کا سروت ہے اور جو اس سرشتی کا رچیتا بھی ہے اور ہمارا پالنہار بھی درود اور سلام اس کے انتم دیو دوت حضرت محمد صلی اللہ علیہ وسلم ان کے سہیوگیوں پر اور ان کے پریوار جنوں پر بزرگوں دوستوں اس دیش کے آشا سروپ بھائیوں اور بہنوں میں سب سے پہلے آپ کی سیوا میں گرو پورنیما کی بدھائی پیش کرتا ہوں مبارکباد پیش کرتا ہوں بات کو شروع کرنے سے پہلے میرے لیے یہ ضروری ہے کہ میں شکریہ ادا کروں دھنیواد دوں اپنا آبھار ویکت کروں شری شری نواسن جی کے لیے شری چیما کے لیے اور ان کے تمام سہیوگیوں کے لیے کہ جنہوں نے مجھے یہ عزت یہ سعادت یہ پریولیج دی کہ میں یہاں پر آؤں اور میں آپ کے سامنے یہ بات کہنا چاہتا ہوں کہ میں یہاں پر ایک پلگرم کے طور پہ آیا ہوں ایک ایسی جگہ جہاں سے کہ ہمیں سبق دیا گیا سبق ملا اور وہ سبق اور سیکھ آج بھی جاری ہے کہ ہم کس طرح سے سیوا سمرپن سادھنا اور آرادھنا کو اپنے جیون میں ایک مثال کے طور پر اپنائیں ادھارن کے طور پر اپنائیں اور اس کی جیتی جاگتی تصویر بن جائیں میں آپ سے مجھے کہا گیا ہے کہ آئی شوڈ اسپیک ان بوتھ دی لینگویجز اینڈ مائی اسپیچ مسٹ بی بائی لنگول بیکاز آف دی فیکٹ دیٹ دیر آر سم پیپل دوز مائٹ نوٹ بی ان پوزیشن ٹو انڈرسٹینڈ ہندی وچ از سرٹنلی آئی ایم ناٹ ویری پروفیشنٹ ان دیٹ But being a North Indian, I am having that flavor. So first of all, I was telling that it's a privilege and pleasure both for me to be here as a pilgrim. And I am grateful to the organizers for inviting me to speak about Islam. Islam, as we know, is basically rooted in Silm, S-I-L-M. Silm means salamti, peace, tranquility, and Islam stands for peace, and in the commonality of mankind. Many people are thinking that Muhammad, peace be upon him, was the person who has initiated the Islam. That's not the fact. Being a Muslim, it's necessary for me to become a Muslim that I must confess, profess, and have faith that Allah is one in form and in virtues. But I also have the faith that Muhammad is his last messenger. Uske divya doot hain. Lekin صرف یہ کہنے سے کوئی مسلمان نہیں ہو جاتا جیسے آپ یہ کہتے ہیں as soon as you profess you confess you pronounce that Allah is one Muhammad is his messenger you have to again pronounce declare and have a faith that آمنتو باللہ و ملائکتہ و کتبہ و رسلہ I have a faith in Allah, in God, in Ishwar, whatever you want to give his name to him, and his angels, his books, and his prophets. And according to a Muslim, no Muslim can be a Muslim until and unless he is not having a faith in all the books and all the prophets to whom we know or do not know, whose names are referred in Quran or not, because Allah had said himself in Quran-e-Hakim, the holy book, that لِكُلِّ قَوْمٍ هَاد, we have sent men to show direction to the humanity, the prophets, to every nation, every community. Therefore, it's obligatory, mandatory, compulsory for every Muslim to respect all religions, all prophets, all the books, and whether we know the names or not. This is not a fact. This is a fact. This is not a fact that Muslims can, a person can be a Muslim just having a faith in Muhammad and none else. We must have a faith. Therefore, it's always told to us that we must know the fact about unity of religion. This is a golden chain of the prophets, which starts from Adam and reaches to Muhammad. That's the basic thing which we must know. And therefore, every Muslim who is a devout Muslim, who is really a Muslim in good spirit, he will respect all religions. Now, another question which comes. You see, people can ask us, is it not a hypocrisy that you people are saying that every religion can be respected? Why not? According to me, and according to faith, which I profess and practice, that religious plurality or religious diversity is basically just because of the design and desire of God. Otherwise, Allah or Ishwar or God is so powerful, so sarv-shaktiman, so taqatwar, so mukhallibul qulub, He can control your hearts, He can change your hearts. Why He has not molded you in one religious form? Whatever has been desired and whatever is the will of God, we must respect to that also. Religion is basically a conviction of mine to a particular tradition. And that depends upon the freedom of conscience which I have. And that is my choice. And that should be my choice. We must not forget another thing. Now a few things are there about what is the position of men or women in Islam. The position of men and women is very clear. Prophet Muhammad in his last sermon had clearly told all the creatures, men or women, are basically the son and daughter of Adam and Eve. And Adam and Eve were made of clay. Mitti se bane the. Isliye kale ko gore par, gore ko kale par, Arab ko non-Arab par, non-Arab ko Arab par, कोई किसी तरह का क्या मैं प्रभुत्व नहीं है, कोई सुपीरियरिटी नहीं है. अगर किसी आदमी को कोई प्रभुत्व है, उसकी कोई फजीलत है, वो वर्चुअस है या नहीं है, इसका फैसला उसके रंग के आधार पर, उसकी भाषा के आधार पर, उसके क्षेत्र के आधार पर नहीं होगा, बल्कि इस पर होगा कि वो कितना पाकबाज है, कितना अल्लाह से डरने वाला है. और अल्लाह से डरने वाला कौन होता है? जिसे तकवा कहते हैं. अल्लाह से डरने वाला वो होता है जो अपने रब को, अपने पैदा करने वाले को पूरी तरह से याद रखता है, भुलाता नहीं है, और साथ में जो जिसको उसने पैदा किया है उन सबकी सेवा करता है, उनके लिए समर्पित होता है. जी, शायर ने इस बात को इस तरह कहा, दर्द दिल के वास्ते पैदा किया इंसान को, درد دل کے واسطے پیدا کیا انسان کو، ورنہ طاعت کے لیے کم نہ تھے کرو ملک۔ آدمی کو جو پیدا کیا گیا ہے وہ سیوا کے لیے پیدا کیا گیا ہے، سمرپت ہونے کے لیے پیدا کیا گیا ہے۔ اگر اللہ کو، اگر بھگوان کو، اگر ایشور کو ضرورت تھی کہ اس کی عبادت کی جائے، اس کی پوجا اور ارچنا کی جائے، تو اس کے لیے تو فرشتے اور اینجلز جو تھے وہ پہلے سے موجود تھے، آپ کو مجھے پیدا کرنے کی کیا ضرورت تھی۔ یہ ہے اسلام کی پوزیشن جسے ہمیں سمجھنا چاہیے۔ دوسری بات جو ہے وہ یہ، مجھے بے حد خوشی ہے رنگا راجن صاحب نے جس طرح سے پوری طرح سے آج کے اس سیمینار کا، اس گوشتی کا، اس سمپوزیم کا کو شروع کرتے ہوئے انہوں نے اپنی بات کہی، اس میں انہوں نے جہاد کا تذکرہ بھی کیا۔ ایک بات تو یہ کہ جہاد کے معنی ہولی وار ہیں ہی نہیں۔ ہوا یہ کہ جب یہاں برٹشرز آئے تو انہوں نے جو ٹرمنالوجی تھی ان کا جو انواد کر دیا وہ ہم نے پکڑ لیا، چونکہ ہمیں انگریزی نہیں آتی تھی، انہیں پوری طرح عربی نہیں آتی۔ سمجھے، جہاد کے معنی ہیں موسٹ سپریم اسٹرگل، موسٹ سپریم اسٹرگل۔ اور موسٹ سپریم اسٹرگل کون سی ہوتی ہے؟ جسے جہاد اکبر کہتے ہیں، سب سے بڑا جہاد، وہ ہوتا ہے جو انسان اپنے نفس سے کرتا ہے، اپنے ایول ڈیزائرز سے کرتا ہے، اپنے ال جو ول ہے اس کے خلاف کرتا ہے، جو اس کے یہاں بھرم ہے، بھرانتی ہے، گھرنا ہے، اس کے یہاں جو غصہ ہے، جو کرودھ ہے، جو ایرشا ہے، اس کے خلاف جو کرتا ہے وہ جہاد اکبر ہے، وہ سب سے بڑا جہاد ہے، وہ موسٹ سپریم اسٹرگل ہے۔ آج جو کچھ لوگ دھرم کے نام پر یا اسلام کے نام پر کرتے ہیں وہ جہاد نہیں ہے، فساد ہے، اور فسادی کبھی جہادی نہیں ہو سکتا۔ اس بات کو سمجھنا چاہیے۔ اگر آپ جہاد کو بھارتیہ درشن کے پریویش میں سمجھنا چاہتے ہیں تو اس کے لیے آپ کو کرو چھیتر کے میدان میں چلنا پڑے گا، جہاں پر کہ ارجن جو ہیں انہیں سنکوچ ہے کہ وہ کس طرح سے شکتی کا پردرشن اور پریوگ اپنوں کے خلاف کریں۔ ایسے میں جو کچھ کرم یوگی شری کرشن نے ارجن سے کہا، اور ہر ہندو گھرانے میں اور ہر بھارتیہ درشن کے سنگرالے میں جو کتاب ہمارے لیے گیتا کے روپ میں موجود ہے، جو کچھ گیتا میں کہا کرشن نے وہی اسلام کا جہاد ہے، اس کے علاوہ کچھ نہیں۔ اس بات کو ہمیں سمجھنے کی ضرورت ہے، اور اس طرح سے اگر ہم سمجھیں تو ہمیں یہ پتہ چلے گا کہ دھرم جو ہیں وہ دیواریں نہیں کھینچتے ہیں بلکہ دیواروں کو گراتے ہیں۔ ہماری پریشانی یہ ہے کہ ہم نے دھرم کے نام پر ویوسائے کا بنا لیا ہے دھرم کو، ہم نے دھرم کے نام پر دکانیں کھول لی ہیں، اور اس کی وجہ سے ساری پریشانی ہوتی ہے۔ دھرموں کا کام لوگوں کو جوڑنا ہے، لوگوں کو توڑنا نہیں ہے۔ قرآن کے اندر میں کسی اور کی بات نہیں کرتا، آپ قرآن کو جا کے چیک کر سکتے ہیں، قرآن میں کہا گیا لا اکراہ فی الدین، دھرم میں کوئی زور زبردستی نہیں ہے۔ دیر از نو کمپلشن ان ریلیجن، اٹس اپون یور کانشنس، یور اون چوائس، یور اون ول، واٹ ایور پاتھ یو وانٹ ٹو اڈاپٹ، آفر اور آپٹ فار یو اینڈ فار یور ڈیئر اینڈ نیئر ونس، دیر کین بی نو کمپلشن۔ دوستو، دوسری یہی بات ختم نہیں کی گئی، بلکہ یہ بھی کہا گیا، قرآن کہتا ہے، میں نہیں کہہ رہا ہوں، اور قرآن مسلمانوں کی آستھا کے انوسار اوپر والے کی کیا میں اتاری ہوئی کتاب ہے، محمد صاحب کی لکھی ہوئی کتاب نہیں ہے، محمد صاحب پہ اوترت کی گئی۔ جی، اسی طرح سے جیسے کہ اگر آپ دیکھیں تو رگ وید کے لیے ہم کہتے ہیں کہ دو طرح کی ہے، شروتی ہے اور اسمرتی ہے۔ جی، تو یہ شروتی ہے قرآن بھی، جو اوپر والے نے نازل کیا محمد کے اوپر، اور محمد صلی اللہ علیہ وسلم کے دوارا ہمیں اور آپ کو ملا۔ اس میں کہا گیا دوسروں کے خداؤں کو برا مت کہو، دوسروں کے خداؤں کو برا مت کہو، چونکہ بدلے میں وہ تمہارے خدا کو برا کہیں گے اور اس طرح سے ایک بلا وجہ کا فساد پیدا ہوگا اور ایک طرح کا جھگڑا پیدا ہوگا. اس جھگڑے کو مٹانے کا طریقہ یہ ہے کہ سب اپنے اپنے راستوں پر رہیں. اور اس کو کہا گیا قرآن کے شبدوں میں لکم دینکم ولی دین, تمہارا دین تمہارا دھرم تمہارے لیے ہے اور میرا دین اور میرا دھرم میرے لیے ہے. Your religion is for you, my religion is for me. اس میں کیا پریشانی کی بات ہے, ہمیں یہ سمجھنا چاہیے. دوستو ہمارے لیے یہ سوبھاگیہ کی بات ہے, اور ایک بھارتیہ مسلمان کے روپ میں مجھے اس بات کو کہنے میں کوئی سنکوچ نہیں, بلکہ سنکوچ کی کیا بات ہے, میں گرو محسوس کرتا ہوں اور گورو محسوس کرتا ہوں کہ ہم ایک ایسے دیش میں پیدا ہوئے ہیں جہاں دنیا کی تمام دھارمک مانیتائیں آ کے جمع ہو گئی ہیں, اور جہاں پر کہ دنیا کی جتنی بھاشاؤں کو سمویدھان مانیتا دیتا ہے اس کی دنیا کسی طرح سے تصور بھی نہیں کر سکتی ہے. اور ہم ان لوگوں میں ہیں جو نسلواد کو نہیں مانتے, لیکن دنیا کی ساری نسلیں اگر آپ کو کہیں ملیں گی تو وہ بھارت کے اندر ملیں گی, اور اگر دنیا کے جتنے بھی موسم ہو سکتے ہیں اگر وہ کہیں ایک ہی سمے میں دیکھنے ہوں تو وہ آپ کو اسی ملک میں ملیں گے. اوپر والے نے جو یہ اوپر والے کا وردان ہے اور اس پر ہمیں خوش ہونا چاہیے, اور یہ ہماری وہ دھروہر ہے جسے ہمیں سنبھال کے رکھنا چاہیے. اور مجھے خوشی ہے کہ یہ کام یہاں سے ہوا اور یہ کام آج بھی ہو رہا ہے. 30 سال پہلے بابا نے اسی طرح کا ایک آیوجن کیا تھا اور آپ پھر اس آیوجن کو کر رہے ہیں, یہ بڑی بات ہے. وہ برابر یہ سندیش دیتے رہے, وہ یونٹی آف مین کائن کی بات کرتے رہے, وہ ہیومینٹی کی بات کرتے رہے. ہم سمجھتے ہیں ہماری آپ کی مانیتائیں اور آستھائیں الگ الگ ہو سکتی ہیں, لیکن ہمارے اور آپ کے لیے منزل ایک ہی ہے. اور میں جب یہ بات کہتا ہوں تو اس کے لیے میں کہیں اور سے نہیں بلکہ ہندوستانی سے ایک مثال لیتا ہوں. ہماری دھارمک مانیتاؤں کا حال وہی ہے جو گنگا اور جمنا کا ہے, جو برہم پتر کا ہے, جو نرمدا کا ہے, جو کاویری کا ہے اور دوسری ندیوں کا ہے. لیکن آپ نے کبھی غور کیا ان ندیوں کے سروت کوئی ہوں کہیں ہوں یہ سب چلتی ہیں, چلنے کے بعد کوئی جا کے عرب ساگر میں ملتی ہے, کوئی بنگال کی کھاڑی میں ملتی ہے, لیکن آخر میں چم مل کر ایک وشال ہند مہاساگر کو بناتی ہیں. اسی طرح سے ہندوستان بنتا ہے ان دھارمک مانیتاؤں میں. اس بات کو سمجھ ایک بات اور وہ بھی میں اسلام کے حوالے سے آپ سے کرنا چاہتا ہوں. اسلام میں ایک بات اور جو ہے وہ یہ ہے کہ مرنے کے بعد کے مسئلے, آپ اگر غور کیجئے تو مرنے کے بعد زندہ ہندو دھرم میں بھی ہونا ہے اور مرنے کے بعد زندہ اسلام میں بھی ہونا ہے, لیکن ہندو دھرم کے اندر ایک آواگمن کی پرکریا ہے, ایک تصور ہے, اور اسلام میں بھی ہے. ہمارا ایمان ہے ول باس بعد الموت, مرنے کے بعد پھر زندہ ہونا ہے, اور زندہ ہونے کے بعد سمرپت ہونا ہے اپنے پیدا کرنے والے کو, اور اس کے سامنے اپنا لوکھا جیکا پیش کرنا ہے کہ جو کچھ ہم نے جیون میں کیا. اور اس کے لیے اگر آپ غور کریں تو آواگمن کے اس تصور کو لے لیجئے یا مرنے کے بعد زندہ ہونے کو لے لیجئے, دونوں میں ایک ہی چیز ہے, اور اس کا جو مول وہ روپ ہے اس کو سمجھنے کی ضرورت ہے میرے نزدیک. وہ کیا ہے, جب مجھے یہ بتایا جاتا ہے کہ تجھے مرنے کے بعد زندہ ہونا ہے اور زندہ ہونے کے بعد اپنے رب کے سامنے پیش ہونا ہے, اور رب کے سامنے پیش ہو کر جو کچھ تیرا کرم یہاں تھا اس کا لیکھا جوکھا دینا ہے, اور اس کے مطابق تیرے بارے میں فیصلہ ہوگا کہ تو نرک میں جائے گا یا سورگ میں جائے گا, تو اس کا کیا مطلب ہے کہ مجھے ایک ذمہ دار ریسپونسبل ہیومن بینگ بنانے کی پوری یہ پرکریا ہے اس آستھا کے دوارا اور مانیتا کے دوارا. یہی اگر آپ دیکھیں تو آواگمن میں ہیں, اچھے کرم کرو گے تو اچھا انجام ہوگا جی, اور برے کرم کرو گے تو برا روپ لو گے. تو معلوم یہ ہوا دونوں کا مطلب مانو کو مانوتا سے جوڑنا ہے, तरीके अलग अलग हैं, उसके लिए अपने अपने अंदाज से लोगों ने बात की है, धर्मों ने बात की है। इस पर भी हमें क्या, हमें बजाय इसके कि डिस्प्यूट करें, उसकी जो मूल है, उसका जो सार है, उसकी जो स्पिरिट है, उसे समझने की कोशिश करना चाहिए। होता क्या है, हम अच्छा इंसान बनने के बजाय इन झगड़ों में पड़ जाते हैं और नतीजा ये होता है कि किसी और का बुरा करें करें ना करें, अपना बुरा करते हैं। एक और बात जो है वो ये है कि इस्लाम में महिलाओं का क्या स्थान है, क्योंकि इस्लाम के हवाले से दुनिया में जो घेराबंदी हो रही है उसमें बहुत सी बातें जो कही जाती हैं उसमें ये भी है कि महिलाओं के लिए उसमें कोई विशेष स्थान नहीं है। मैं आपसे कहता हूं, कुरान को उठा के देख लीजिए, अल्लाह ने जहां मर्दों की खुसूसियात, विशेषताएं, वर्चूज बताए हैं, सेम उसी जगह एक ही उसके अंदर सांस के अंदर उसने महिलाओं के भी वही वर्चूज, वही खूबियां, वही विशेषताएं बताई हैं। मर्द और औरत को कुरान जो है वो एक दूसरे के लिए वस्त्र के रूप में पेश करता है। लफ्जी यही है कि औरत और मर्द, स्त्री और पुरुष एक दूसरे के लिए क्या, हमें लिबास की मानिंद हैं, वस्त्रों की मानिंद हैं, जो एक दूसरे की पर्दापोशी करते हैं, एक दूसरे के को छुपाते हैं, शेल्टर देते हैं। दोनों एक दूसरे से अलग नहीं हो सकते। आप मुझे बताइए, अगर लिबास कहा गया है, ड्रेस कहा गया है, गारमेंट कहा गया है, वस्त्र कहा गया है, तो क्या एक 5 फीट वाले को 3 फीट का लिबास सही हो जाएगा? ये दोनों को एक दूसरे के बराबर बताने की कोशिश थी जो की गई। दूसरी बात जो है वो ये कि जितने भी एम्पावरमेंट के तसव्वुर हो सकते हैं, कल्पनाएं आप कर सकते हैं, वो सारी की सारी इस्लाम में रसूल के, पैगंबर साहब के जीवन काल से आपको मिल जाएंगी। इकोनॉमिक एम्पावरमेंट का सिंबल उनकी बीवी हैं, जो मक्के की बड़ी एक्सपोर्टर इम्पोर्टर थी। और प्रॉफिट होने के बाद भी ना आप कुरान की कोई आयत दिखा सकते हैं और ना हदीस और रसूल का कोई कथन दिखा सकते हैं जिसमें कहा गया हो कि अब तक सब सही था, लेकिन ए खदीजा, ए पैगंबर की बीवी, अब जो है तुम एक प्रॉफिट की बीवी हो गई हो, नाउ यू हैव बिकम द वाइफ ऑफ द प्रॉफिट, देयरफॉर यू शुड वाइंड अप योर होल बिजनेस। शी वॉज ए ग्रेट एक्सपोर्टर इम्पोर्टर ऑफ हर टाइम एंड मोहम्मद वॉज बेसिकली इंगेज बाय हर एज हिज ट्रेड रिप्रेजेंटेटिव and his trade was spread over from Yemen to Syria, but she had never been asked by God or by the prophet, now because you have become the wife of the prophet, therefore you should wind up your business. Whatever was permissible for the wife of the prophet, who happens to be the mother of the Muslim Ummah, how that can be not permissible for the daughters of Ummah? Therefore, as far as the educational empowerment is symbol can be concerned, the wife of the second wife of the Prophet Aisha was the great educator of the Ummah or the community, and she has given us 1/3 of Islamic law, Sharia, that we owe to her, and whatever was good for her, how that can be bad for the daughter of the Ummah again. As far as the political empowerment is concerned, political empowerment, we are having many examples, including from the field of Karbala, where the granddaughter of the Prophet was martyred. Then the granddaughter of the Prophet had led the rest of the people to the court of the Damascus and pleaded for the case of her own brother and others martyrs. As far as spiritual empowerment is symbol, Rabia Basri is a great name in the Islamic history. So therefore, whatever is happening, that is not because of Islam. If there is something not good, is there, as far as Muslim women is concerned, that is not because of Islam. That is because of male chauvinism, which has no regional or no religious color, but that's basically the general psyche of a man to dominate the women folk. In that way, now you come another problem, whether can we live together, whether the Hindus and Muslims, Christians and Muslims, Jews and Muslims, Buddhists and Muslims, Parsis and Muslims, Jainis and Muslims, and people of all other indigenous faith and Muslims can live together? Yes. Why not? Nobody can prevent them. Nobody can create any obstacle in their relationship, because we are all creature of God. Muhammad had said, you people are basically the servants of Allah and the descendants of Adam. Therefore, you must remain together. And as in Hindu dharma, Vasudeva Kutumbakam is basically the mool mantra for the survival of mankind. Prophet Muhammad had said, Al-Khalqu Ayalullah, Samast Jeev Jantu, not Manav, Samast Jeev Jantu, Bhagavan Ke Kutumbi. All creatures belong to the family of God. That is the saying of the Muhammad, peace be upon him. Dusri baat jo hai wo ye, ke zindagi ke har maidan mein, hum ek dusre ke saath puri tarah se apne taluqat bana ke rakh sakte hain. Hame koi usme pareshani nahi hai, is baat ka hame khayal rakhna chahiye. Dosto, aur baatein agar hum kare, to zindagi ke andar hamare jo mamlaat hain, وہ اس دنیا کو بنانے کے لیے ہمیں سوچنا چاہیے. میری آستھا یہ ہے اور میرا خیال یہ ہے کہ اس میں دنیا کے بہت سی دھارمک آستھائیں اور مانیتائیں شامل ہیں جو یہ کہتی ہیں کہ جنت سے آدم کو نکالا گیا اور حوا کو نکالا گیا اور نکالنے کے بعد اس دنیا میں بھیجا گیا. اور بہت دلچسپ بات ہے جو میں آپ سے یہاں شیئر کر لوں, وہ یہ کہ جو مسلمانوں کی آستھا اور مانیتا ہے اس کے مطابق آدم جو ہیں وہ ہندوستان میں اتارے گئے تھے. اس لیے انڈیا از ناٹ میئرلی اے مدر لینڈ فار می بٹ اے فادر لینڈ ٹو. اسی لیے اگر آپ کو دیکھا ہو تو دیپ ساؤتھ آپ جائیے تو ایک آدم کا پل کہلاتا تھا جی, وہ اسی لیے ایڈم. تو بیسیکلی مسلمانوں کی یہ بھی آستھا ہے. اور دوسری بات ایک اور بتا دوں ہندوستان کی سندرب میں, اقبال پوئٹ کا نام آپ نے سنا ہوگا, سارے جہاں سے اچھا ہندوستان ہمارا جن کی وہ ہے, ان کی ایک بڑی نظم ہے ہندوستان کے بارے میں جس میں انہوں نے گنگان کیے ہیں. اس میں انہوں نے ایک پنکتی کہی ہے, اس میں انہوں نے کہا ہے, میرے عرب کو آئی ٹھنڈی ہوا جہاں سے, میرا وطن وہی ہے میرا وطن وہی ہے. میرے عرب سے مراد محمد صاحب ہیں. محمد صاحب کی ایک حدیث ہے, کتھنی ہے, جس میں انہوں نے کہا کہ مجھے ہندوستان سے ٹھنڈی ہوائیں آتی. تو اس طرح سے میں آپ سے جو بات عرض کر رہا تھا, اس اعتبار سے اگر دیکھیں تو ہندوستان جو ہے وہ ہمارے لیے بہت اہم ہے. اور جب سوال آتا ہے لوگ کرتے ہیں کہ دھرم اور وطن, آپ ان میں سے کس کو, دیش کو کس کو پیار کرتے ہیں, تو میں کہتا ہوں میں دونوں کو پیار کرتا ہوں, دونوں کا احترام کرتا ہوں. اس لیے کہ جب میری ماں کی کوکھ میں میرا بیج پڑا تھا تو میں ایک بھارتیہ مسلمان مہیلا کی کوکھ میں میرا بیج پڑا تھا, اور اس طرح سے میرے دونوں رشتے جو ہیں وہ اپنی جگہ امر ہیں, اور ان کا رشتہ میری ماتر بھومی سے بھی ہے اور میری ماں کی کوکھ سے بھی ہے. اس لیے ان چیزوں میں پڑنا ہی نہیں چاہیے اور ان سب کو ایک طرح سے ماننا چاہیے. رسول اللہ صلی اللہ علیہ وسلم نے کہا ہے کہ وطن کی محبت ایمان کا جز ہے. Love for your motherland is basically an essential ingredient of your faith. That is the saying of Prophet Muhammad. اس بات کو بھی سمجھنا چاہیے. تو جو لوگ اس طرح کے بھرم اور بھرانتیاں پھیلاتے ہیں یا بیوقوفی کی باتیں کرتے ہیں, ان سے کوئی دھرم کا لینا دینا نہیں ہے, اس بات کو سمجھنا چاہیے. ایک بات میں اور کہہ دوں جو لوگوں کی سمجھ میں کہ ہمیں اکثر جس سے کیا میں غلط فہمی پیدا ہوتی ہے وہ یہ ہے کہ میں جب یہاں کھڑا ہوا ہوں تو بھارتیہ سنسکرتی کی جو دھروہر ہے اس کا رشتہ میرا 1000 سال سے ہے، 1200 سال سے ہے، 1300 سال سے ہے، میں کہتا ہوں نہیں، بھارتیہ سانسکرتک دھروہر جو ہے اس کا میرا رشتہ اتنا ہی پرانا ہے جتنا کہ بھارتیہ سانسکرتک دھروہر ہے، اور بحیثیت مسلمان کے میں یہ بات ڈنکے کی چوٹ پر یہاں نہیں کہہ رہا ہوں، ہر جگہ کہتا ہوں، اور اس کو سب کو ماننا پڑتا ہے، میرے لیے تھوڑا سا فرق ہے، اسے آپ کو بھی ماننا چاہیے اور مجھے بھی ماننا چاہیے، وہ یہ جب میں کہتا ہوں کہ یہ سانسکرتک دھروہر میری ہے تو رام بھی میرے ہیں اور کرشن بھی میرے ہیں، فرق ایک ہے، آپ کے لیے وہ بھگوان ہو سکتے ہیں، میرے لیے وہ مریادا پرشوتم ہے، آپ کے لیے کرشن بھگوان ہو سکتے ہیں، میرے لیے وہ بال گوپال ہیں اور کرم یوگی ہیں، وہ ارجن کے سارتھی ہیں، چونکہ مہابھارت کرو چھیتر میں ختم نہیں ہو گئی بلکہ ہم سب کے جیون میں ہر وقت ایک مہابھارت ہوتی ہے، یہ دوسری بات ہے کہ ہم خود ہی اپنے ارجن ہوتے ہیں، خود ہی اپنے کرشن ہوتے ہیں، جو ان سے پریرنا لے لیتے ہیں وہ کامیاب ہو جاتے ہیں اور جو نہیں لیتے وہ ناکام ہو جاتے ہیں، تو یہ فرق ضرور ہے، اسے آپ کو ماننا چاہیے، میں آپ کا ادھیکار مانتا ہوں، آپ کو میرے کیا میں جو بھاونائیں ہیں ان کو بھی سمجھنا چاہیے۔ دوستو، میں بحیثیت مسلمان کی آپ سے ایک بات اور کہتا ہوں، جب میں یہاں کی سنسکرتی کی بات کرتا ہوں، یہاں کی پرمپراؤں کی بات کرتا ہوں، تو میں یہ بھی مانتا ہوں کہ جو کچھ کہا گیا ہے اس میں سب کے لیے برابر کا سبق ہے۔ دوستو، دنیا میں ساگر منتھن ایک دفعہ نہیں ہوا تھا، ساگر منتھن ہر وقت جاری رہتا ہے، روپ بدلتے رہتے ہیں، جی جب ساگر منتھن ہوتا ہے اور جو ہوتا رہتا ہے اور ہر پل ہو رہا ہے آپ کے میرے جیون میں، آپ کے میرے سماج میں، اس میں ہوتا کیا ہے؟ اس میں ہوتا یہی ہے کہ راکشس جو ہیں وہ تو امرت لے بھاگتے ہیں اور وش کو مانوتا کے وناش کے لیے چھوڑ جاتے ہیں، ایسے میں کوئی شیو آتا ہے، بھولے ناتھ بن کر وش کو گرہن کرتا ہے، نیلکنٹھ بن جاتا ہے، آپ اور میں کتنے ہیں جو مانوتا کو بچانے کے لیے نیلکنٹھ بننے کو تیار ہیں، یہی مانوتا کا اس پہ بھوشیہ نربھر کرتا ہے۔ اور آپ کہیں کہ مسلمان ہو کے تم یہ بات کر رہے ہو، میں نے پھر کہا شیو آپ کے لیے بھگوان ہیں، میرے لیے وہ مانوتا کو بچانے والے ایک پرتیک کے روپ میں، ایک سمبل کے روپ میں میرے لیے سرو مانیہ ہیں، اور میں ان کا احترام کرتا ہوں، ان کی عزت کرتا ہوں، ان کا آدر کرتا ہوں، ان کا سمان کرتا ہوں، اور میں سمجھتا ہوں کہ دنیا کے ہر سماج کو ایک نیلکنٹھ کی ضرورت ہوتی ہے۔ یہ باتیں میں نے اس لیے کہیں کہ یہ غلط فہمیاں دور ہونی چاہیے۔ میں مسلمان ہوں، میں اللہ کو ایک مانتا ہوں، اس کی ذات کے اعتبار سے بھی، صفات کے اعتبار سے، میں محمد صاحب کو مانتا ہوں، میں قرآن کو مانتا ہوں، میں مرنے کے بعد زندہ ہونے پر ایمان رکھتا ہوں، مجھے اس بات پر کوئی وہ نہیں ہے کہ دنیا کا کوئی ایسا دیش نہیں ہے، اور دنیا کا کوئی ایسا راشٹر نہیں ہے، اور دنیا کی کوئی ایسی نیشن نہیں ہے جہاں پہ کہ اوپر والے نے اپنے مارگ درشک اور دیویہ دوت نہ بھیجے ہوں، مجھے ان کے نام معلوم ہوں یا نامعلوم ہوں، مجھے سب کا سمان کرنا چاہیے۔ اگر میں ان کا اقرار نہیں کرتا تو مجھے ان کا انکار بالکل نہیں کرنا چاہیے، کیونکہ جو بات پتہ نہ ہو اس پر آدمی جو ہے اسمنجس میں ہے تو پھر ایک فیصلے پہ نہیں پہنچ جانا چاہیے، اسے اس کا خیال رکھنا چاہیے۔ یہ اصل بات ہے جو کہ اسلام کی مول روپ سے ہے۔ میں نے آپ کے سامنے کچھ باتیں کہی ہیں، ہو سکتا ہے کہ یہ باتیں کچھ آپ کی سمجھ میں آئی ہوں، کوئی بات آپ کو اچھی نہ لگی ہو تو میں اس کے لیے معافی چاہتا ہوں، لیکن میں نے ایمانداری سے جو کچھ سچ تھا وہ آپ کے سامنے کہا، چونکہ اگر میں یہاں بھی سچ نہیں کہوں گا تو پھر کہاں سچ کہوں گا، کیونکہ میرے نزدیک تو خدا ہر جگہ ہے، خدا ہر جگہ ہے، اور خدا کو अगर कोई चीज नापसंद है तो तीन चीजें नापसंद है। एक, अपने साथ किसी को शरीक करना, दूसरे मानवता को नुकसान पहुंचाना, और तीसरे झूठ बोलना। हम तीन चीजों से बचेंगे तो दुनिया को एक दफा फिर इंसानों के रहने के काबिल जगह बनाएंगे। खुद दोस्तों, आपसे मुझे सिर्फ एक बात कहनी है, जो लोग हमें आपको लड़ाने पे आमादा रहते हैं उन्हें सिर्फ एक बात बताइएगा, लड़ने के लिए भी पैरों के नीचे जमीन चाहिए। जमीन न रहेगी तो लड़ोगे कहां पर? देश को बचाओ, देश को बनाओ, मानवता को बचाओ। असल में मैसेज हमारा और आपका यही होना चाहिए, यही आज का मूल मंत्र है, यही आज की जरूरत है। अगर हमने ऐसा कर लिया तो वो आदम और वो हव्वा जिनकी हम और आप औलाद हैं, जो जन्नत से निकालकर जमीन पर भेजे गए थे कि इस जमीन को जन्नत और स्वर्ग बना दें, क्या हम ऐसा करने में सफल हो पाएंगे? ऐसा करने में सफल हुए तो हम बुनियादी तौर पर उस मिशन को पूरा करेंगे जिसको इस जगह आराम करने वाले ने आपको संदेश के रूप में और अपने मार्गदर्शन के रूप में दिया था, और जो सारी धार्मिक मान्यताओं की मूल आत्मा है। बहुत बहुत धन्यवाद।
Sairam, we hope you enjoyed that lecture by Professor Akhtarul Wasi, head of the Department of Islamic Studies at Jamia Millia Islamia, New Delhi. It was part of the Symposium on Unity of Faiths held on 2nd of July 2012 at Prashanti Nilayam. Please do send us your feedback by email at listener@radiosai.org. It is now time for me to offer morning glory at Bhagwan's lotus feet. So, dear listeners, this is an utterly grateful Karuna bidding you Sairam. I hope the rest of your day continues to be filled with Swami's presence and love and protection. Before I hand you over to my colleague, Brother Raghu, I ask you to please be well, keep seeking, and stay inspired. Sairam.